Well, it's been a lot of fun here today for the last 3 hours on Big Band Music. Hope you enjoyed yourself, whatever part of that time you were able to spend with us here, WHFR.FM, your favorite independent, non-commercial radio station, I hope, because it's not going to be like any other station you found anywhere else, either broadcasting in the Detroit area or on the internet or on your iPhone. That's for sure. And so all kinds of formats, all kinds of things happening. In the next hour, coming up, the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Views, with your host, yours truly, Jay Koronick. But I've had a lot of fun today. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate that. Just sort of a signature song just to go out with is the song we're going to go in with, because now it is time for the new WHFR Journal. And here we are, another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for tuning in. Jay Koronick, recycled, taking off my DJ music person's hat from the last hour, and now putting on my hard news and information hat. You wear a hard hat when you do hard news? Well, we do some soft news, too. Those are technical terms, folks, but hope you understand and can enjoy that. Little joke there. So local news and views from Dearborn and the surrounding area. I'm going to be taking a look at, as I do each week, the local newspapers, the Dearborn Times Herald, the Dearborn Press and Guide, and there's a number of stories that we're going to try to cover today. I'm going to try to cover a little more than usual. I am not joined by either one of my co-hosts, and we do want to say that we're sorry that Susan Morrell, our WHFR news director and promotions production manager, needs to leave the staff, and is still in town, but going to be leaving in the next week or so for sunny Florida. Not because there's no sun in Michigan, but because of, guess what, folks, the job situation, the economic climate. Got to have a day job, even if you're having great fun and full-time at a non-commercial educational station. And so we certainly wish her well in Florida. And maybe she can give us a special report about what's happening in Florida, see if the job situation is any better down there. So it's just yours truly here today. From the Downriver Sunday Times, which is a Times Herald publication, a couple of front page stories, just interesting things to keep in mind, I think, in terms of what's happening in the world here, in the vicinity. Detroit Water and Sewage, which provides water to Dearborn and several downriver communities, are raising their rates, as you might expect. Number one, because the city of Detroit is broke. Number two, because, of course, costs go up on everything. Energy, electricity, I assume, to run the water and sewer facilities. Well, three communities, it's announced here by Tristan Crow from the Sunday New York Sunday Times, not our New York Times, but our local Sunday Times, Downriver Sunday Times. Three communities might join forces with either the Downriver Wastewater Treatment Plant, and I didn't know there was one, but I guess there is, or they might develop their own facility. And here's the story. Riverview and Trenton, along with Gros Eagle Township, are looking to sever ties with Detroit Water and Sewage Department and spent a year discussing their options. Currently, the three communities are discussing a feasibility study that will cost them a total of $69,000. Oh, is that all? That's chump change. To determine their water options, whether it is more affordable to buy water from Wyandotte. I guess they're the ones that have the Downriver Wastewater Treatment Plant, or continue with Detroit, or operate a separate water facility. interesting to think that maybe new technology will allow you to install it and operate it at maybe even lower costs than, you know, throwing money into an older facility like Detroit's, for example. And you keep it under your own control, which means it might be able to be managed more efficiently, too. Just, it's possible. I mean, certainly quantity, there's quantity discounts for everything, and a larger operation should be able to give you whatever product or services at a lower cost, but not always. That technology issue is certainly important. And so we're going to keep tabs on that story because it might be a great trend. I doubt there's an option for Dearborn to do that. Number one, I don't think we have enough land to do that. But Trenton and Riverview approved the plans in June to go with that option for the final feasibility study, and Gros Isle approved of it way back in June 23rd. It comes after Detroit Water and Sewage Department contacted the municipalities about signing a 30-year contract, which goes into effect once the current one expires in 2015. So still a few years away, actually 7 years from 2008, but nonetheless, it's something you want to plan for. So they said the rates from Detroit keep increasing, so we want to find a different alternative. Certainly, if you're going to be locked into something for 30 years after 2015, you've got plenty of time to do a great study and to build, even plenty of time to raise money and build for a new facility. And he said Gros Isle will see rates eventually increase to 24.3% eventually. And so that's why they're looking at another option there. Keeping you up to date on the other big story here, pit bull regulation down in Wyandotte. A bunch of human pit bulls, very angered citizens. I guess that's either a good or a bad metaphor if you know, depending how you feel about pit bulls. But here's the story from Brooke Stevenson from Wyandotte. Several residents attended the city council meeting of Wyandotte last Monday. This is probably a week ago Monday. This is the Sunday Times from last Sunday. To voice opposition against the first reading of the pit bull ordinance. An amended second reading of the ordinance will be tomorrow at the city council meeting. So it's that was a week ago Tuesday. Emotions ran high last week in the audience, even though no decisions were to be made on the ordinance during the meeting. It would prohibit this ordinance anyone under the age of 18 from owning a pit bull, whether Staffordshire Terrier or pit bull mix. Residents who own these breeds would have to comply with muzzling their dogs when not in a confined area and must follow leash laws. A microchip would have to be implanted under the dog's skin for identification, too. Any dog owner who does not comply within 60 days of the approval of the ordinance, if it is approved, would face civil fines ranging from $25 to $500. Owners would have to contact the police department and animal control if their dog runs away and is given to another, or is given to another owner, or dies, or is involved in an attack. In a way, to be responsible, shouldn't you notify the animal control people in the city, and no matter what kind of pet you have? If it's lost, if it's been given to someone else, I'm not saying that you know, that all animals are dangerous weapons, like some people think pit bulls are. Actually, yesterday in Dearborn, I saw a person out with their pit bull in their front yard, but not on a leash. It was a very small, probably a baby pit bull or something. It couldn't have been more than 12 inches long, maybe, you know, couple months old or something, and it was cute. And you feel sorry for them because they can't really walk very well, you know, stubby little legs, you know, and so on. But and it didn't seem like it was doing any injury. But maybe there's certain breeds, you know. They only mention, you know, they mention a pit bull mix or the Staffordshire Terrier. So even if it's a mix, as long as it's a pit bull, I guess, of any sort, we'd have to go through this. So people were testifying on both sides, and a lot of people said pit bulls suffer from negative stereotypes. And if you're going to set rules, set them for all dogs. I say, all dogs have teeth. I say, make it fair. They can all bite. And I kind of understand that. Although, you know, more rules and regulations, I think we've got plenty right now. The incident of pit bull attacks or any sort of dog attack is really kind of low. Well, that was just the update on that story, is that they don't have a final ordinance yet, as far as we know, although maybe something happened in the last week. Looking at the Sunday Press and Guide from August 17th, 2008, last Sunday. This is the Dearborn Press and Guide now. In Dearborn, after the death of Police Chief Michael Selesky, who was only 49, it has been announced that the city of Dearborn hopes to fill that position, top law enforcement post, in the next 3 to 4 months. And that statement came from Dearborn Director of Public Information, Mary Landrosch. Landrosch said that an interim chief will be named soon. And we know that the three department heads are sort of co-running the police department in Dearborn at the present. Yes, three commanders have been handling their own departments without necessarily any lot of coordination. So a permanent chief, so that interim chief will be announced soon. Probably one of those, my guess would be one of those three department chiefs will act as the sort of the interim police chief and do their job too at the same time, be my guess. But anyway, a permanent chief will be appointed and internal external candidates will be considered. So an official hiring procedure is going to be put into place. Dearborn's Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. has a timeline set to make a decision, but there's currently no lead candidate. Historically, City Brass has tabbed someone from inside the Dearborn Police Department for the position. For example, Selesky himself in 2005 was promoted from deputy chief to the top position by then-Mayor Michael Guido after 26 years of experience in the Dearborn Police Department. Dearborn City Council President Tom Tafelsky said he believes O'Reilly will conduct a thorough search and that whoever is selected has a good grip on how to manage the department. He's saying, I guess he feels that they should have a good grip, or that they will, certainly. Tafelsky went on to say it's a tough job to manage a department the size of Dearborn's. He added that the position will be posted in various publications and on the internet. Tafelsky said, quote, hopefully whoever is chosen will be able to continue what's been going on in the department and take it to the next level in the next few years, as if it's some sort of video games. Take it to the next level. You know, there's not always a next level, folks. But we always hope we could do better than even the best that we're doing now, right? I mean, always room for improvement, as they say, with everything. And that's the time frame, if you're wondering about that. When are they going to get a new police chief? Well, things are fine already, thank you. And this Saturday, which means tomorrow, in Dearborn Heights, their fire department in Dearborn Heights is going to host the 16th annual chili cook-off and family picnic from noon to dusk at Parkland Park, which is west of Outer Drive and north of Ann Arbor Trail in Dearborn Heights. The popular event helps raise funds that allow children who have been seriously injured in fires to attend the Pretty Lake Vacation Camp. It's a week-long camping adventure hosted by the Great Lakes Burn Camp of Jackson, Michigan. And it's entirely funded through donations and fundraisers with no out-of-pocket expenses to the parents or children who attend the camp. It costs about $500 per child to send a child to the camp, so every dollar raised during the cook-off will be applied directly to the children's camp fees. I have never been asked to be a chili cook-off judge, but since I make my own special, very spicy version, I feel I'm an expert, but then again, I have my subjective preferences too, of course, to the way that I do it. I don't know if there are different categories that they give prizes in or just the best overall, but someday I'd love to be a judge. Any of you nonprofits out there that want Jay Koronek? Yep. WHFR station advisor and host of the new WHFR, Journal every week, to be a chili judge. Just putting my name out there because I know fame and fortune will come to me once that happens. For a minimum donation of only a dollar at this event tomorrow at Parkland Park from noon to dusk, which I think is about 9:30 at night. Guests will be able to sample one of the nearly 20 varieties of chili that will be available during Saturday's cook-off. I wonder if for a second dollar you can try something else. I bet that's possible too. If there's enough chili to go around anyway. So that's happening, and maybe you want to be part of that. Certainly I want to mention, too, during this show specifically, something to do this weekend, and only this weekend. It's the last weekend of the play being presented on the Adrae Auditorium stage here in Henry Ford Community College's own Fine Arts Center on our main campus, Evergreen Road to South Ford Road. It is William Saroyan's Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy drama, The Time of Your Life. And this story is, this play is set in a bar in San Francisco in 1939, and it examines the lives of patrons of that bar who are struggling with their destiny in an ever-changing and dangerous world. Full of touching insight, rich comic moments, and unusual characters, it blends sentiment with social purpose. I've read a few Saroyan plays, including this one, in my English teacher days. And Saroyan, very clear, very human dramas, always with a social point, get you thinking, not too heavy duty, not philosophy necessarily, but get you thinking about the common good and what you could do to help it out. Presentations this weekend of The Time of Your Life are tonight, Friday night at 8 p.m., tomorrow, Saturday night, the 23rd of August at 8 p.m., and Sunday, August 24th at 2 p.m. only. All seats are $7, $5 for students with IDs. If you want more information or reservations for The Time of Your Life here at Henry Ford Community College, Adrae Auditorium, you can call 313-845-9817. That's 313-845-9817, the last weekend of the two-week run of this play. Great, great play by William Saroyan, the Time of Your Life. Okay, now we are looking through further. Let's see if we're going to miss anything. Sunday Press and Guide. Nope. Nothing else there. I have a couple things from the New York Times today. I say, New York Times, it's supposed to be a local news show. Well, of course, issues that might matter to us. From Wednesday, New York Times, something I guess was carried on the major commercial news networks. And it's just an example of how even the New York Times is stooping to sensationalism. It's a very sad story, but is it really necessary? But here it is in the New York Times. A shoplifting suspect who fled a TJ Maxx store near Lansing, Michigan, died after being crushed in a trash compactor where she was hiding, according to the Eaton County Sheriff's Department. Now, sometimes you do news stories because there's a moral. There's a lesson to be learned. What's the lesson here? Well, don't hide in trash compactors. I guess that's it. So if there's anyone out there that, you know, maybe they couldn't read and they didn't see the sign saying trash compactor, do not hide inside. I'm not making fun of this tragedy other than it's making fun of it as a news story. But wouldn't you know, this and the mayor of Detroit is what gets covered nationally in the New York Times. Or does it say in general, you know, that allow people nationally to generalize about people in Michigan? How dumb are they? Well, they're as dumb as some of the things the mayor of Detroit does. They're as dumb as shoplifting suspects who want to hide in trash compactors. And then this is kind of local news from the New York Times today about Toronto. Toronto. Different country. Yes, it's in Canada. I know we have a lot of listeners in Windsor that I think can still pick up our signal and always have great fun in Canada. I enjoy the country much. I enjoy the culture, the people. I've spent a lot of time in Canada, never lived there, but visited Toronto many, many times, one of my favorite cities to visit. Wish I could afford to stay there longer. But their most hated man, criminal. Stories about the most hated man in Toronto. Terrible criminal. Talk about evil in everyday life. Well, just kind of, this seems to be, you know, typical of Canadian culture, is that the greatest evil in Toronto, right now anyway, was a man who had stolen and accumulated 2,865 bicycles. What was he planning to do with these? The story goes on. It's just one of the many questions the police and others have been puzzling over since the arrest last month of Igor Kenk. That's K-E-N-K, the proprietor of a used bike shop in Toronto. Kenk's legacy now fills the top floor of a former police garage, organized by brand name and mostly resting on their handlebars, wheels pointed upward, are 2,396 of the bicycles that police say Kenk either stole or arranged to have stolen. The Rat Pack collection of the bicycles arguably makes Kenk the unofficial world champion of bicycle thieves. But as he awaits trial next month on 58 charges related to theft drugs, the biggest mysteries of all are Kenk's motives and his ultimate plan for the armada of steel, rubber, and aluminum that he amassed. Alex Jansen, a filmmaker who has been working on a documentary about Kenk for more than a year, says he's easily the most hated man in Toronto. But I just found that it's not as black and white as I originally thought. Ah, maybe there is no such thing as pure evil then, folks. If you look more closely, Kenk was something of an informal social worker, Jansen explained, giving work to street people and outpatients from a nearby mental health institution. Of course, some of that work allegedly involved stealing bicycles. The arrest has provoked an outpouring of emotion and publicity in a city renowned as one of the most bicycle-friendly places in the world. Yeah, I was always hoping that, you know, Dearborn, which is one of the one of its claims to fame, is that it is an officially designated and certified Tree City. Capital T, capital C, Tree City. There's a nonprofit organization, Tree City USA, I think it is, that certifies these things, sets the guidelines, and every year Dearborn does a great job for its trees, planting more, taking care of old trees, and so on. And why can't we be Bike City USA? Okay, there is a national organization of bicyclists which have that designation. And I think Ann Arbor has it. There's several grades of being a Bike City USA designee. I think Ann Arbor is one. Traverse City is another. You need bike pass. You need a whole bunch of things. And this little meandering trail behind University of Michigan Dearborn for joggers, walkers, or bikers doesn't fit the bill here. It's bike paths that are not just for recreation or amusement, but actually for transportation. They actually go somewhere, too. So you can get exercise and save on energy while you're going to work, you know, or while you're going shopping. Dearborn have that? No. No, I did state about a month or so ago, and maybe I didn't qualify it, that whoever takes care of chopping away brush and maintaining the sidewalk on the south side of Michigan Avenue from West Dearborn to East Dearborn and vice versa wasn't doing their job. It was terrible. You like a forest, and you frequently, of course, the sidewalk itself is all got cracks in it and bulges and in terrible shape. It's not a bike path at all. I should ride on Michigan Avenue, which would be legal to do so, but of course, you know, the speed at which people drive on Michigan Avenue and all the cutouts and cut-ins from Southfield Expressway there make it quite dangerous. Even if you're on the sidewalk, it's quite dangerous because you can't pass over. There's no pass over those exits and entry lanes. In any event, I'd love to see Dearborn become Bike City USA. When I was talking to some of the bike shop people a month or so ago on the show locally, there seems to be no local Dearborn bike club. There used to be one out of the Monroe Bike Shop. There is a bike shop on Monroe now, but in fact, we've had a couple of internationally known bicyclists. One was, I think, with Lance Armstrong on one of his competitive teams in the Tour de France several years ago. although when he got back, he admitted that he had used drugs to supplement his training regime and regimen, and that was unfortunate. But Bike City USA would be a wonderful thing. By the way, the show, since I don't have a producer, can't take calls. I've had several calls coming in here. I see the light flashing, and I can't answer it. Why? Because I'm doing the show right now, so I apologize. But that's life. Okay, we'll get back to them somehow. Public reaction, anyway, is staggering to this event, this arrest of this bicycle thief. The superintendent of the 14th Division, the unit that made the arrest, the police department in Toronto, Ruth White, said, "I've never seen anything like this public reaction in 30 years. So this is what's important in Canada. And don't we wish we had this as the most important issue in Detroit or in Michigan? And it is an important issue because bicycles are wonderful things. If the city would, you know, give you a bike path and set up the right regulations and train drivers as part of driver ed how to properly treat and respect bicyclists on the road. We have the right to be on the secondary roads, anything other than expressways. And by golly, you know, who's taking care of the sidewalk on the south side of Michigan Avenue there from east to west? I mean, they did cut away some of the brush. They did cut down some of the grass. I give them credit for that, but not enough of it. Not all of it. There's still branches hanging down low. I know I'm 6 foot plus tall and I'm on a bike. And so, you know, probably the people on the ground that are cutting these branches, they can't get up that high, but they should cut them. So at least, you know, 7 foot clearance, I would hope. In any event, the story goes on here. The police and many bicyclists in Toronto were aware that Kenk's little shop, the bike clinic, as he called it, appeared to be a black hole that consumed stolen bikes. Bike theft victims regularly discovered their missing bicycles there and were often able to recover them, either through vigorous argument or by paying $30 or $40. While he had been arrested once before, Kenk was acquitted because prosecutors could not prove that he knew the bicycles in his possession had been stolen. After that, the police lost interest in pursuing him, and the public came to tolerate what they saw as his eccentricity. It had become the culture in his neighborhood to visit Igor to get your bike. People accepted it, unquote. The only reason that was the police person. The only reason Kenk was arrested was that bicycle thefts rose sharply in June, prompting the 14th Division to start a general effort to entrapment of bicycle thieves by planting bicycles on the streets and waiting to see who took them. Ooh, stakeouts. Oh, boy. But seriously, you know, bikes could become as important as a person's horse was in the old Wild West. If cars are not viable, because we can't afford to put gas in them anymore or pay the other expenses associated with them, then bicycles could be sort of a life or death transportation issue. You know, in Detroit, Metro Transit, not a good second or third choice yet. Maybe somebody will find a way to improve that. Well, since Kenk's arrest, theories about his hoarding have proliferated because Kenk held a scrap metal dealer's license. Inspector Brian Evans speculates that he was playing the commodities markets, that when the price would go up high enough, you'd just have these bike frames melted down and he'd get a lot more than $30 or $40 a bike from some. Some of the, you know, really expensive bikes are made out of very expensive metals, platinum or whatever, but some of them are very expensive. And, you know, some bicycles, I have seen some bicycles made of exotic materials that cost as much as $5,000 or more. And they're very lightweight and they're very rugged and they're fun to ride because I understand the frames are flexible in the sense of they sort of mold to your riding style and besides, of course, having shock absorbers on the wheels, which the more expensive bikes have. So maybe that was it. And in the past, Kenk said that he was accumulating bicycles in preparation for a severe oil shortage. Didn't think about the price increase thing. See, in Canada, they've always paid more money per gallon for their gasoline, just like in Europe. If you've seen that BMW ad on TV these days, they show that in Germany, people are paying $8 plus per gallon, and they have for years and years and years. And you say, well, Why is that the case? It's because the United States, we've been seduced into cheap oil. Yes, our government's had some subsidies going. And the oil producers have given us oil at a lower rate than others so that we would consume more and more and more of it and change our lifestyles and our everyday lives and our factories and so on to expect low-priced gasoline and oil. And then when the price goes up, ha, 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 we're stuck with paying it, aren't we? At least for a number of years, maybe a couple decades before we can find the more appropriate lifestyle, which Canadians and certainly to a greater extent Europeans, because of the cost of gasoline, has always been at least double or three times what we've had to pay in the U.S. They've paid the real international price for the scarcity that is crude oil. Okay, there's a limited so-called finite supply, and not going to find too much more in the future. Yes, we'll find more, but it'll be more expensive to get at, blah, 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 like coastal oil and shale oil and other ways that oil exists on this planet. But there's only so much, so we better change our lives now. All of us. You know, my big deal was that I was able to find a place to live within 3 miles of my job. And so I can bike in, or even if I'm forced to walk in every day to work. I don't even need to ride a bus because there's no bus line that goes this way. You know, sort of squirrels in and out back streets and so on. But it's great for riding a bike. So Toronto, you're to be credited with being probably Bike City North America. People are already into biking there, and the city supports that. And now they're cracking down on bike thefts big time. Igor Kenk, we'll try to find out what happens to him in the future. See if that documentary film ever comes out. Also, I thought I had it here somewhere. Yes. No, I don't. New York Times had a review. Here it is. Yes. A review today of a documentary film. Then I don't believe it's in Detroit yet. It hasn't opened in Detroit. But it might be opening in Detroit. I just haven't looked for it. If you watch Glenn Beck's show on CNN Headline News in the evenings, he's had several people on from producers and so on commenting about it. But even the New York Times, so-called liberal paper, have reviewed this. It's called IOUSA. So they sort of, it's not W there, but it's sort of like how much we are in debt nationally and how this hurts all of us. And very excellent documentary film. And here's the brief review. So maybe you put it on your day planner or your calendar or something. Check and find and ask about IOUSA. That's just those letters, like IOU and then USA, but it's pushed together and only one U. IOUSA. And here's what it is all about. Another documentary that everyone should see, but most will not, tackles the unsexy topic of our soaring national debt and its likely consequences for present and future Americans. Again, the title, IOUSA. And says at least future Americans who can survive the tsunamis, water shortages, and Beijing-level air quality promised by Al Gore. Of course, his film, The Inconvenient Truth, that feature-length documentary that was so that influenced society so greatly about 2-3 years ago. And hopefully, if you haven't seen that one, The Inconvenient Truth, you should see that too, of course. But this one is extremely important because most people say, oh, I don't understand the billions of dollars. I don't understand the economy. I'm just trying to, you know, survive myself, manage my own budget, what there is of it. Well, this review goes on to say that brimful, this film, IOUSA, is brimful of disquieting facts on inflation, trade deficits, and Wall Street's influence on national monetary policy. The director, Patrick Creedon, Resolutely's nonpartisan movie, so don't think, well, it's pro-Democrats, pro-Republicans, it'll influence the, you know, it's supposed to influence the presidential election in fall. No. Not taking sides here. Just talking about the issue. As it tracks America's fiscal cancer, in quotes, fiscal cancer, through centuries. America's only been around two plus centuries, but through centuries of budgetary highs and lows, packaging his inconvenient truths, these economic inconvenient truths, with as much humor as he can muster under the circumstances, Mr. Creedon balances his talking heads and pie charts with the folksy progress of the fiscal wake-up tour, capital letters there, a grassroots effort spearheaded by David M. Walker, the former Comptroller General of the United States, and Robert L. Bixby of the Concord Coalition. So these are two groups that are also very concerned about our national debt. So this film, IOUSA, it has equal parts of enlightenment and also alarm. It highlights our unwise preference for short-term reward over long-term planning, a weakness not shared by the film's exemplary Chinese household, which saves more than half of its $10 a day income. So the average household in China saves 50%, half of their income. Even though it's so low at only $10 a day. But then, again, other costs are lower for them, too. But, you know, amazing that they have, I mean, how we would be so prepared for retirement or crises or emergencies if we could save half. I mean, I think right now budget people say, could you put 10% in, you know, to a savings account or something that might earn more money, maybe investment accounts or other things that I won't go into now, but can you take out of circulation and put into some way, some sort of situation that's going to benefit you? It's certainly true that all of us do not save enough. Live for today, die tomorrow, something like that. Probably you won't die tomorrow, and you're going to need to have some savings. How much? The last time I heard a professional economist, television book or whatever, they generally say 3 months' income for yourself or your family. And that means 3 months' net pay, okay, after taxes, that you could have available, and this is called liquidity, when you can have it easily accessible, you know, within a couple of days at least, if you need it. And so that's extremely important to do. And especially, of course, I know insurance costs for health insurance, dental insurance, and so on. If your employer doesn't pay it, you've got to save up to pay those costs yourself. And they're not getting any smaller either. So this movie, even though it's focused on the national level, will also maybe inspire you, your friends, your family to involve yourself in saving and watching your money more carefully. Being in debt on a regular basis is not a good thing. The movie's wrist-slapping tone, however, means they're slapping your wrist. Bad. Bad. Okay. Shaking their finger at you. That's another metaphor similar. Is softened by Mr. Walker's eloquence and Mr. Bixby's rueful, self-deprecating charm as they trudge tirelessly from one town hall to another, urging Americans to save rather than spend. Good luck, boys, the review here from New York Times concludes. Susie Orman has been working on that for years. Susie Orman, one of those TV talk show hosts. Is she on CNBC or MSNBC? She has a regular show. Very, very wise tips. And she's very cautious. She goes against the norm for the sake of being careful and being rational and planning into the future more than usual. Economic advisors, or some, I think, are too much looking for a fast buck here. Well, our message for the day, that's the review of IOUSA from New York Times. Our comment for the day from an outside source is Ralph Nader from votenader.org. He's talking about foreclosures, and this what he recorded today, the 22nd of August, and he has five of these little recordings available at his website, votenader.org/audio. And you can listen yourself to the last several days if you want to. But we're going to feature it right now here on the new WHFR Journal, since foreclosures are all around us still. And here's the latest and the commentary, very intelligent all the time, from Ralph Nader, presidential candidate, independent presidential candidate, who will be on the ballot here in Michigan in November.
This is Ralph Nader. This year, 2.5 to 3 million Americans will lose their homes to foreclosure. Next year, another 2.5 to 3 million Americans will probably lose their homes. Instead of helping these Americans keep their homes, both the Democrats and the Republicans are bailing out Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the Wall Street banks, and their high-paid executives. The same executives who got us into this mess by betting the house on subprime mortgages. I call this socialism for speculators. Senator McCain takes a hands-off approach to the mortgage meltdown. Senator Obama talks about helping the homeowners, but is surrounding himself with the culprits, Wall Street bankers. Obama's economic director? Robert Rubin protege Jason Furman. Rubin was the Clinton's Treasury Secretary. He engineered the disastrous deregulation of Wall Street, including the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. This Depression-era law separated investment banks from commercial banking. Had it been in effect, the current mortgage crisis would have been limited. Rubin went on to be an overpaid executive at Citigroup, which he helped tank. Rubin is now advising Senator Obama. Nader Gonzalez would bring back Glass-Steagall. Nader Gonzalez would reinstate the usury laws that cap interest rates, and we would regulate Wall Street instead of bailing it out on the backs of American taxpayers. This would include forcing mortgage companies to renegotiate the mortgages of millions of homeowners who are currently faced with being thrown out onto the street as a result of foreclosure. Instead of punishing the homeowners, Nader Gonzalez would bring justice to the predatory lenders on Wall Street who deceived them and who got us into this mess in the first place. Highway 61, the longest highway that I know. Highway 61, the longest highway that I know. It runs from the Twin Cities down to the
Highway 61 offers nothing but the finest in a wide variety of blues every Friday from 2 until 6 p.m. From the front porch to the concert stage, featuring local, national, and international blues, Highway 61 has something just for you. I'm Joanne Korchenska, and you are welcome to join me as I cruise down that historic highway every Friday from 2 until 6 p.m. only on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Independent radio at its very best since 1985.
So, Joanne Korchenska, yes, she will be here in just about 18 minutes now on Friday the 22nd. If you're listening to the new WHFR Journal and our podcast from our website, WHFR.FM, it could be any day at any time. And because of copyright legislation, we cannot archive pre-recorded music shows, that is, shows that have pre-recorded music in them, without paying tens of thousands of dollars, which, of course, is more than our annual budget, and so we wish we could feature that on podcast too, but this show available podcast in case you missed something or you want to laugh again or cry again as a situation. Wanted to mention, of course, our usual disclaimer, and that is that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, okay? And, of course, the Ralph Nader's commentary gave a plug for his candidacy for president. Yours truly is not endorsing, on this show anyway, Ralph Nader for president. However, he and his vice presidential candidate, last name Gonzalez, will be on the Michigan ballot, and that's a choice to vote. And it's usually shocking or surprising to many people that once every 4 years they look at the presidential ballot here in Michigan, and there's usually seven candidates to choose from. It's not a primary, folks. I'm talking about the real election. I say, well, these people can't be important. They can't know anything. They can't be viable candidates. We never heard of them. Well, whose fault is that? Okay. The media. the newspapers, even the New York Times and that. There's other candidates out there now. The Green Party has chosen their candidates for president and vice president. Who's covering that? I mean, they're out campaigning every day. The Libertarian Party has Bob Barr and Wayne Allen Root as his vice presidential candidate. And in fact, they were here. Just get into a paper, get into a local paper? No. Bob Barr visited U of M Dearborn's campus on August 7th. First of all, I'm upset with the Libertarian Party. They didn't tell me about it. Okay. He was at the campus. Let's see, he was there on the 7th, and then on the 8th, he was at U of M Dearborn campus, and he spoke to a crowd of students. With only a couple days' notice, Scotty Bowman and Greg Stemphill coordinated the activity with the Barr campaign. Scotty Bowman was on this show 2 years ago with their gubernatorial candidate, Greg Cresswell, I believe was his name. And so we do hope to have some of these alternative candidates or their representatives on speaking on this show, because what other media, radio, TV, is responsible enough to cover all the candidates? Well, I will say that frequently the local newspapers do, at least on the local candidates, that they will give equal time, maybe just a couple paragraphs, but pretty much equal time to each candidate for school board and other local offices. And so definitely read your weekly local papers, like the Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn Times Herald. Remember, they're not the same. They don't have the same stories frequently, and they don't have the same angle on the stories, the same approach to them. Interview different people and so on sometimes. So you really need to read them both if you have the luxury of more than one local paper. And it says here that unfortunately, sometimes there are things outside your control that work against you in terms of this speech by presidential libertarian candidate Bob Barr at U of M back on August 8th. Because the day that Barr arrived in Michigan, Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick was ordered to jail. Remember that day, of course, for violating conditions of his bond. The following day, the mayor had two morning court appearances brought live to you on all media outlets in the state. Because of the mayor's continuing legal troubles, most of Barr's media appearances were canceled, including at the Detroit News and WJR AM 760. Another reason for Kilpatrick to resign, isn't it? Important candidates who are up for office this fall, presidential candidates, are denied access to the media because of your situation. Well, in any event, we will get some of these people here on as best we can. Not too many weeks, 7 weeks only before the November election. And a lot of candidates out there, a lot of issues, and we do always encourage you to explore all the issues and all the candidates, whether it's political parties or, like with Nader Gonzalez, the independent candidates that they are. They have firm positions. Go to their websites, go to and find out as much as you can. That's what a good citizen would do, and I know you want to be a good citizen. And I just had another discussion with people here at WHFR this morning. Who are they going to vote for? One of them was surveyed by a pollster. Okay, ask about how do you feel about Obama? How do you feel about John McCain? They said don't like either one of them. But in the past, this person has said they vote for the lesser of two evils. And they did swear, thank goodness, but not on the air, that they would never do that again. And I think that's the right approach. Do not vote for the lesser two evils. Vote for the best possible candidate who's on the ballot, no matter what party they're in. They have to be good people in your mind, people you can trust, and people that are consistent, and people that will be true to what they're saying. Boy, that's hard to say, because once you're in office, oh, all bets are off, right? How many campaign promises are actually fulfilled or can be fulfilled? Say, well, but if an independent or, libertarian gets in office and they have all those Democrats or Republicans in Congress, they won't get any bills passed. Well, do you think the Democrats or Republicans have gotten bills passed that they wanted? Jennifer Granholm has tried and tried and tried. Has had all these great programs she's wanted to get passed. Hasn't happened very much. except when a few of the Republicans let down their opposition, decide to work out compromise. And that hasn't happened much. So, Ralph Nader, yes, he's got some very good opinions, some strong opinions, but also some great facts. He knows stuff. Very smart guy, keeps up to date, lawyer by trade from years and years back, and so he knows the laws. He keeps up to date on the different things that are happening, and he reads extensively. And he is someone to listen to. Whether or not you want to vote for him is not another issue, but he is someone to listen to who is well-educated and extremely knowledgeable for the good of the people, I think. Sure, he wants big government projects that are actually not corrupt and are actually moving in the directions that they should be, not necessarily the ones we have now. So some people would call him a liberal or progressive, or would try to slur him and saying he's in favor of socialism. Well, we've got socialism already in this country. What is Social Security but socialism? What is Medicare and Medicaid but socialism? And these have worked pretty darn well. Oh, they've got to be tweaked, but they've worked pretty well. What is national single-payer health care? Well, it depends how you define socialism, but it's kind of like socialism. It's a little different in Canada than it is in England, or that is Great Britain, or France or Germany. Each have different kinds of federal systems of health care for everyone. Some, I understand, technically can't be called socialist, but they're still big government programs that are taking care of everybody. Our system is not working. It is broken. Costs are out of control, and Medicare and Medicaid, therefore, are failing us because they can't keep up with the cost they have to pay to all the private hospitals and the private HMOs and so on. And so, so I do listen to a lot of alternative candidates myself. Haven't quite decided who I'll vote for president, for example, yet. And I think that's good. I don't think anybody should decide this soon. I think there's a lot more to know about at least the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Nader-Gonzalez platforms. Those are three totally viable choices that will be on the ballot in Michigan. If you don't know anything about them, it's not because they haven't tried. Okay? It's the fault of the media for not bringing it to your attention. And, of course, most local papers, they don't feel that they should cover these things because it's national stuff, right? Well, if the national media aren't covering it, then yes, the local papers, every time Nader or Barr, and actually I've seen more coverage of Ralph Nader when he came into Dearborn and Michigan in 2004 in the local Dearborn papers than in the whole New York Times. So God bless local papers. What can I say? For doing their duty. Looking at other issues here with, only 8 minutes to go before Highway 61 comes up. Okay. Always love these breaking news stories from a press release from the city of Dearborn yesterday. You'll read this in the local papers next week. A new service now offers an option for Dearborn taxpayers. Maybe other local cities have this. I don't know. It's the convenience of paying property taxes online. So if you don't pay your property taxes, don't let your bank do that by getting money from you in advance and making money on your money without giving it back to you, called escrow accounts, and then paying your taxes so that your amount of payment every month stays the same, at least for 12 months. And then if taxes have gone up, they need more money in that escrow account, they'll start taking more from you early before these are due. So if you pay your own property taxes, most people probably know that, you get hit with a fairly big chunk about four times a year. You could pay it all at once, but that's, for the average household, might be $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 all at one time. And I've been looking at real estate elsewhere, just my idle retirement time, and whether it's up north in Michigan or Texas or New Hampshire, Madison, Wisconsin, these houses all seem to be, and in the same sort of price range, about $4,000 a year in property taxes. So Michigan doesn't have necessarily a lot higher or a lot lower property taxes for the same kind of property, but it's hard to pay them all at once. But you have to know here in Dearborn, September 14th, that's the first pay date. Either pay the whole thing somehow or start paying the four payments, which come up, I think, the four months in a row. And therefore, if it's $4,000 for the whole bill, it'd be about $1,000 for each one of these payments. Well, if you can't write a check, I'm not saying you go in debt, but just for convenience sake, you can go online to cityofdearborn.org, click on the link on the website's front page in the government section that says 2008 tax information and payment. Now, without internet access, you can also go to a toll-free number, 1-800-2-PAY-TAX, and use a special code, which I'm sure you're not going to remember from my saying it, unless you're listening to the podcast and can just replay this section. You need a jurisdiction code 7089. If you're going to use the phone number, 1-800-2, the number 2, 2-PAY-TAX, P-A-Y-T-A-X. Taxpayers who choose the online payment option should be aware that the firm contracted by the city to provide the service, they're called the Official Payments Corporation, they do charge a fee. The fee is 3% of the amount of your transaction if you pay by credit card. Now, you have to understand that most credit cards charge the vendor that allows you to use them there 3%. So, you know, they have to pay that in order to provide you the service. And so they have to raise their prices, maybe 3% higher. There used to be a discount for cash. Should be at least 3% discount, but nobody does that anymore. It's too confusing. But I think if we're going to stop getting ourselves in debt, we ought to consider paying cash more of the time. And maybe it would be a great incentive to do that if we actually got a chance to do it you know, on a regular basis. Yeah, for everything. Not that you can pay these things on tax. So anyway, if you pay by electronic check for transactions and or use the credit card, it's $10,000 or less. It's going to be that 3%. It might be more if it's more than that. I don't know. Otherwise, be sure to mail that payment in, and it needs to be received, check or money order only, not cash, by September 14th. Yes. Needs to be at Dearborn Treasury September 14th. Maybe similar in other communities. Maybe other communities already have the service, but you can use which credit cards? All of them? American Express, Discover Card, MasterCard, and Visa. No, Diners Club, sorry. Or via electronic check, and what that is a transfer out of your own checking account. And again, the service fee of 3% applies to those. So 3% of $1,000 is $30. So for $4,000, it'd be $120 extra dollars if you're paying $4,000 in property taxes. But a great service, I guess, from the city. If you need to use that option, it's there. Everybody's a little bit different, okay? And, well, we have to move along now. Oh, my goodness. Joanne Korczynska is coming into the studio. Highway 61 Cruise is going to get started in just a moment. I want to thank all of our listeners for listening to this edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick. Any comments or questions that you want to direct to the station, our email address for all comments and questions is whfr@hfcc.edu. Since we're from Henry Ford Community College, we are WHFR Dearborn, of course, WHFR.FM, Making Waves. And so we're going to go out with we actually have time to play our untheme at least a little bit today. And so we're happy you could tune in and be part of this local news interview. Stay concerned, stay involved, be careful out there, and try to enjoy what's left of the summer. Take care. Bye-bye. This is Jay Koronick. Say stay tuned for Highway 61. Let's keep stirring things up too, huh?